welcome to Conversations About Life.
Well, thanks, Natalie, for being a guest on my podcast.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And so we've known each other for a little while. I photographed your and John's wedding back in, you said, 2010.
Yeah.
And I was just looking up some things on about you on Facebook this morning, and I noticed that you have, like, you're educated in, like, music therapy. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you're a Roman Catholic Christian.
Yep.
And you are married, and you have three kids now, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then anything else you want to say as far as just introduction about, you know, who Natalie is?
I've always been that kind of free spirit into musical theater. Never was in a production, but enjoyed, my grandma would take, we would go together, actually, and see, like, the community theater in town.
Hmm.
And growing up in Chicago was a big kind of influence for me. And I'm trying to think what else.
Growing up in Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was kind of just that exposure of, I was in suburb land, but
okay,
it, I find now, it, looking back, it kind of had a impact in just kind of who I am.
Okay.
And but then also University of Iowa is in a smaller town in Iowa. Not as, for Iowa standards, it's more of a midsize, but it was a, I love that as well. So it was a fun kind of exploring being from a, around the outskirts of a very large city, mm-hmm. to then kind of enjoying just a smaller town and just finding, like, enjoying both of those worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think what else. And then the last part was probably violin's always been a strong influence. I started in fourth grade.
Okay.
And that kind of was a big foundational moment for me in my life. And then kind of seared the love of classical music that still is alive today.
So. Oh, who's your favorite composer?
I go back and forth. It's always, I love Mendelssohn, and especially for violin, I like Bartok. I have a hard time playing it, but I enjoy listening to it.
So I don't know too much about classical music. Like, sometimes I put it on as background music.
Yeah.
Like, even just now, that's what I did a search for, and it something else came up, so I just went with it.
Sure.
But well, I did a search for, like, Mozart background music. But I don't know too much about classical music, but is that something you had to learn to enjoy, or did it just come naturally for you?
It did come naturally, but then it's also the humbleness of how much you really don't know, even after how many years.
Oh, really?
That it's, like, especially, we're actually very blessed if you haven't ever listened to it, in, because I think it does pick up down here. It used to be 99.1, but it's 107.3, the classical radio station.
107.3 now. Okay.
Yeah. And I, when you listen to it for at least for a certain amount of time, and the hosts, we're very lucky to have incredible local hosts that are so knowledgeable about even just how do you pronounce the composer correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the knowledge base they have to have is just endless.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just find that it came naturally always since I was a kid. But then that, like I force, even sometimes I force myself to, even though I love it, but to, like, listen to the radio and not pick something else sometimes to just have more exposure. And even they'll give little kind of caveats to the composer's life, or that it, you kind of do have to be intentional to keep on bringing in the, your kind of base of what you know, but then just also remind yourself just to enjoy it. in that my tendency is to be too analytical with the music.
As far as like the composer and the background and stuff like that? Or what do you mean by analytical?
It's when you've been slightly more trained of what a good performance would be. Mm-hmm. Even though on the radio, every performance is flawless, honestly. But it's that sense of even analyzing just what this composer is doing with the notes. But then taking a step back and being just kind of turning that analytical side off for a moment and just the pure joy of what this person came up with. And another humble moment would be just in reality, you only have so many notes to use, but yet the endless variety that people throughout centuries have come up with, it's just mind blowing for me. And yeah. I feel like it's like cooking too. Like you only have a certain amount of ingredients actually, you know, you can change throughout the world what's available, mm-hmm. but like just the little nuances that what makes a good dish, what makes mm-hmm. that like just like why would someone cry over the music or different reaction that the power of it, you know, it can be used for good or bad, but that endless fascination, I guess, would be.
Yeah, I guess I never thought about that, but you do only have so many notes, don't you?
Like, yeah.
The chromatic scale has like a bunch of half steps. So how many half steps does it have?
I'm not good at all. I'm the person who laughs. Normally it's, oh, you'll be a great math person if you study classical music. Never transferred quite. But still that I've seen the people really talented at music theory.
Yeah.
And they could
right.
talk their ear off. But
right, the way that, it all fits together.
Yeah, because kind of. It truly is like magic and very complicated, actually, of if you have to actually analyze it. Mm-hmm. And
Yeah, like popular music just comes so easy. You just listen to it a time or two. It's got a beat. It can be catchy or whatever. Yeah. And you don't even have to listen carefully. You don't even have to really pay much attention to the words. It can just kind of rhyme and you can just, but classical music, I always get the feeling like there's so much more there than what I'm getting.
Yeah.
And I'm just, it don't come as easy, just the enjoyment of it, I guess.
But
maybe it's worth working on. Perhaps maybe I should just tune into the radio station.
I have to say, even just that alone is like a form of education. Mm-hmm. Like in, just you would think that you couldn't learn another new thing each day, but truly it's some new piece that you never heard of played. It's just fun of kind of being consistent with even just one thing, and then all the what it can bring to a person's life. Yeah.
So popular music kind of builds on itself over the years. So you got like the blues and jazz, and then out of the blues comes like rhythm and blues, then rock and roll, and then you got this and that. So is classical music like that, or is it really a different type of thing?
I mean, that part I'm not as like the expert on, but we did learn in college, like, you have music history. Mm-hmm. And so you do have, like, the base. Usually it was always based in church of that baseline of chant. And then even the development within that. Mm-hmm. And then kind of going, there's all the, you have actually it's even that sense of history, art, and music interplay with each other all throughout all of history. Hmm. So even just like a monumental part of Enlightenment and then how that influenced music or you know, usually who the composer who's able to fund them, and then who they're playing for, and that kind of even do you, like, where is it being performed? Are we having an actual opera? Are we the, like, slow development of even the, what instrument is around at that time?
Right. And
it really is actually been drastically changed a lot. And then there's fierce debates of what is kind of classical composers people would look up to or not. And I mean, it never ends.
Then is modern day classical music just alive and well as far as just being what's being produced? Or is classical music more of like stuff of history?
There's more being produced than you realize.
Okay.
And I am only at like a tip of the iceberg of even knowing. If you kind of, one thing I found, if you look at Symphony Orchestra, their season that they'll put on the website, usually they always try to showcase a new composer.
Okay.
If it's not brand new, but just a current composer. And then if you kind of track it enough, you can start getting a sense of who are some of the current composers today.
Okay.
And then there is just kind of with history and with even people's, your own worldview kind of does influence sometimes what music you would tend to want to create. You know, with, there is, I would say there's a little more kind of extremes that's possible today than maybe previously. Which we would probably be on the same page of opinions about, but.
And it can be kind of based on the composer's worldview then, huh?
It kind of can't, because it's even like the sense of, you can have dissonance in which this, you know, the note naturally sounds like it's not resolving, but then would the composer resolve it in a way that then your ear is like, oh, okay, it, like,
oh, so it's like order or
order, yes, that's order. What I'm trying to actually, right. Yeah,
because
or kind
like,
of chaos, like,
right?
You know,
because you can have a worldview that there's a God-given order to life, or you can have a worldview that everything's kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
And that could be reflected in the music, perhaps.
Yeah. So it's a little less sometimes obvious in classical music versus other music, but it is kind of still an aspect there.
Yeah.
You know, but luckily there truly are like very current, there's a wide range. There's much more composers currently creating than you realize. I guess that's my best answer. Yeah.
And do you still enjoy popular music as well?
I go through, I'm the weirdo where I am like classical music, and then I just absolutely love late 1960s, 70s.
Okay.
I love the Beatles and Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
So it's just, and I enjoy, to be honest, they're actually very complicated music. I had no idea, especially with the Beatles, actually, in particular. They're very unique where they were exposed to a their note. How do you say? Because they actually do not, most of them don't know how to actually write music down.
Okay.
They're all by ear. And they're kind of, I first picked up on this during college, where I would see some people being assigned where they had a in music theory terms, analyze Beatles music, and they were like literally freaking out of how hard it was, and I'm like, oh, and people kind of think no one probably will ever achieve it again, where the music doesn't sound super complicated, actually. And it, even the fact you can have underneath it a very complex music theory that somehow works, and yet it can actually also be singable, a memorable melody, and it's still that complex, actually. And because honestly, for bands who play Beatles music, or even like Paul, who still tours around, Paul McCartney, the musicians he has on his band, they all have to be pretty top-notch to pull off the whole range of repertoire that he's created. So it's kind of something that I feel like most people wouldn't actually realize.
Right, yeah. It seems like I'm not an expert on Beatles.
And I'm not either, in reality, but it's been fascinating to learn just a little bit more.
Yeah. Now, I know a little more. Like, I did grow up listening to Led Zeppelin.
So sure.
What is it about Led Zeppelin? Like, what do you like of Led Zeppelin, and what are your thoughts about that?
I always forget the names. Stairway to Heaven and the, actually, do you remember some of the main titles? I'm totally...
I don't know if I remember. I remember songs, but, you know, like... there's like the Rain Song, and they're No Quarter, and I don't know, there's a bunch of
For me, it's, I understand how it can, you do have to be careful, I'll be honest, you know, with kind of worldviews and stuff, but there's just something kind of guttural about their music, and the almost kind of freedom of voice in it. Just love that, just kind of just go all out, and and just, it's very difficult music to play, so I always, that kind of is a theme for me. If it's like has an actual, like, you're like, whoa, you are a really good drummer or really good guitarist or vocalist, and like you because also back in that day, you didn't have... One thing I actually have learned more recently in the past 5 years, nowadays you have all the technology where you can kind of make it sound a little better than back in those days when they would record the music. The bands had to like be on point every single take because you couldn't kind of manipulate it, to be honest. And so that even sense of... They created this own music and then perfectly perform it and be able to even survive the kind of how difficult to be a musician really is, and kind of correctly record it and all of those details that not everyone can kind of pull off, I'll be honest, you know.
Well, what I was wanting to ask you about is about yourself. So, I guess, like, first of all, just starting off, and I don't know what the best way to ask is, but like, just what is your philosophy of life, or from your perspective, just what is this all about? You know, what's life all about? You know, and just kind of, I guess it's like a worldview question.
But... I mean, of course, being, for me, Catholic does influence every decision of my life and that framework of the world. And I would summarize it of the gift of the incarnation, that that radically changed the world, and the sense of God truly dwelling with us. And for us as Catholics, we also believe in the real presence of the Eucharist. So that sacramental life and the, for me, a true gift of, no matter how lonely you could feel, you're actually, you could just make a visit and he's right there. And I've had some profound moments in my life of just sitting in an adoration chapel, not even always saying anything, but just having a strong sense of like, wow, thanks for being here, Jesus. And that you do frame your life of, heaven is the goal. And we would also frame it as, in our own version, trying to be a saint and live a holy life and having where you have to be, I fail every day, but the sense of you really do, it's been actually surprising for me of, as I become more of an adult, of how often you have to really think through of every decision of your life and of how the faith, if you're going to actually do it, influences that much more. But then the freedom it brings, you don't have to, you have a guidance in a way. And then you also can know that this is like the true good, that kind of a concept that they're kind of like the music in order, that in the end it's like perfect order, or that even in a painful situation, you still can have like actual peace, like the real peace that God would only bring. Mm-hmm. And I've witnessed people go through very like insanely hard situations, or like even spouse dies or other stuff, and just how they show up in life, and that, you know, the faith really influences their ability. Doesn't mm-hmm. mean it makes it easier, but just that sense of sacrificing well, but for a greater purpose, and that it's not for nothing. I love that kind of a concept for myself. And
So when it comes to like being in God's love, so for you, what is that based on? Like, what is, you know, the grounding for your like acceptance by God and his love for you as his child and so forth?
There is first that God is our loving Father in everything, and we are his beloved children. You know, each soul is a gift from God, and that if you, that true love, that proper love of loving yourself in a real way, and because God loves you, mm-hmm. you know, and I find that's like the crutch of it, of if you can get work on that your whole life, that if you almost can't get that correct, nothing else can kind of follow. And there is that also, which can be difficult, I'll be honest, but there is that acceptance of authority as well, and that kind of you can have there still is your own role in it, but yet like there usually is very kind of goes against what the world would want you to do with heavier decisions or kind of hot topics. And I do find myself of that kind of reminder to myself, am I really going to do this or not? Like take the easy way out, or have of maybe I don't understand it more deeply. And we also have such a rich throughout a long time, all these different writings and encyclicals and endless, just endless ways to enrich what you already are taught, but then to go deeper. And I appreciate that there's endless chances to go deeper. And people who, how do I put, and that daily, if it's up to you of how much you partake in it. But like my husband, for example, tries to go to mass every day, and how that even influences the family life. Like, I remember our oldest, Peter, when he was little, once, and it was harder, I'll be frank, I haven't been as good with maybe going to mass throughout the week, and that's something I'm kind of working on. But Peter, in this cute little, like, toddler way, would be like, hey, is mass at, dad at mass right now? And I'm like, yeah, you know, and he would just kind of be, oh, cool. And that witness of having like a structure and order to your life, to be honest, and in that it's, you don't have to even come up with it. It's just, it's there. Whether or not you partake in it is kind of up to you. But I enjoy, as someone who's more, doesn't want structure, I'll be frank, that reminder of, but if I had to come up with this, like, what a burden that actually would end up being of even the, because I, during my internship in music therapy, did a lot of hospice work. And it was such a gift that's impacted me forever. And even that sense of, you don't have to come up with, if someone dies, what do we do now? Like, it's just in place, you know? And it's, kind of going off, but that sense of there's something beyond yourself, and that also very, there's many people who have done horrible things, truthfully, in, but then, also the endless, examples of people who really intentionally lived a holy life. And the gift of so many people to look up to as well. And
so now you brought up, like, you know, trying to be a saint.
Sure.
And I remember, I don't know if it was at your rehearsal dinner, at your reception or something, like, I think during the speech, the best man was saying something about, like, John's aspirations were wanting to be a saint.
Oh, you know? Sure. Okay. I kind of forget that, but I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
And so, you know, so I'm a Protestant.
Yeah.
And so we have, like, a particular view of saints that you probably, Catholics probably acknowledge, but you all have something additional besides that. But, like, so we think of a saint as, like, well, it means, like, a holy one or someone set apart for God, belonging to God, for God's purposes. And we think of, like, well, we're made a saint through the atonement of Jesus. And like, he purchases us, forgives us. And now we belong to him as, like, in his kingdom, in his family, and so forth. So we would see, well, anyone who enjoys the, you know, the benefits of Jesus, they are a saint in that sense.
Yeah.
But you all, like Catholics, have, like, a view, another view of a saint, I think, that's, like, something that's different, that's kind of, like, particular. Not every Catholic would be a saint, or not every Christian would be a saint, but there are those who reach, like, this place. So tell me about that. What does that mean? Like, am I kind of on the right track of what
you all... It's kind of where, of course, we, in the end, you don't know what happens in the afterlife. You know, anyone who did end up going to heaven is a saint, truthfully. We have, for what we would call canonized saints, we have a whole process that I am not great at all the details of it, but there is, like, a whole investigation process, and then you kind of start where they perhaps are called like blessed. And then you always have to have some miracles that are approved and other things to actually have where they would have a full, this person's what we would call a canonized saint.
Okay.
And still acknowledgement, there's anyone who led a very holy life could truly, it's more of kind of a public that through the miracles and other looking at their life, this person is a little more confirmed to be, let's look up to them. And also it's that sense of multitude of witnesses that we can ask for their intercession, a prayer. Still always praying to God and not kind of just that sense of intercessory prayer as well.
Okay. So in that sense, so Protestants, you know, they sometimes have a problem with Catholics praying to the saints.
Of course, and I know that,
but,
yeah.
But
yeah.
But you are not like praying to the saints in place of praying to God, but you're asking them to pray on your behalf. Kind of like what we do as Protestants is we might say, hey, I'm going through this. Would you pray for me?
Yeah, it's always described to us.
Right.
So
we do that only, you do that with the saints who have gone on. So that's just, so there's a similarity in that.
Yeah. Right. And we would also ask people around us in person.
Right.
And like one example that I've found when I'm around more Protestants, like you have the beautiful like missionary stories or, great pastors or orators or, that just wonderful lives to read about and to emulate and be inspired by.
What in our current internet life, we're exposed to everything nowadays, like Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam. Yeah. There's all these competing worldviews. So what is the thing that tends to give you confidence that your Christian worldview is like they can't all be true because they conflict. So what gives you confidence in Christianity, I guess, is the question.
It would be that the proper sense of suffering that, and some of it is some of the Pope's writings and other, in just the real gift of that fundamental sense of what Jesus brought, that it was such a, I love that analogy of either what, I'm trying to struggle with the words. If he really wasn't who he was, he would like be a lunatic, or the most radically changed for the world of that sense of your that one God and looking out for the vulnerable, and especially that the fuller understanding of suffering, and there's always glimmers of truth in all the religions, but it's something I've really try to educate myself on more of what is it about Christianity that does have that fullness of faith, we would call it. And So those were kind of fundamental pieces for what I've read and then believed. Mm-hmm. And it always comes down to, for me, that real how a human being is treated and the even viewpoint of like the caste system, for instance, you know, mm-hmm. that you would actually have a different kind of just by someone's birth that they would be impacted for the rest of their life. Right. And we kind of grow up in, to be honest, such a, especially in America, I've been able to travel or meet people from around the world, actually. Mm-hmm. And that even what I find is that we take for granted sometimes some of that, how a human is treated, and that it is influenced by Christianity. Mm-hmm. And that it's kind of the proper love that is God always meant in, let me think. It's the, like, one other story was always, like God seeing what humanity is doing and becoming one with them. And the kind of, you can never fully comprehend that, like, God actually dwelled among us. Mm-hmm. That, like, and again, that fun, going always back to the incarnation. Like, actually, John said he met someone once who, in his dissertation, this was kind of at the height of still a kind of Catholic culture context, for where he was studying, that they asked, what's the most kind of influential history moment? And he kind of gave his answer, and they're like, no, it's the incarnation. Mm-hmm. And that proper sense of that. Mm-hmm. And then what is different about that than other world religions? That would kind of be for me.
Right. Yeah.
Ask more if I'm not kind of making myself clear.
No, you're making yourself clear. Like, I'm reminded, I haven't read this book and I'm not a historian, but there's a historian whose name is Tom Holland, and he wrote a book called Dominion. Mm. And it's all about how Christianity has impacted the Western world in ways that we just take for granted.
Yeah.
And there's been, he was just shocked by going back and looking at, like, the Greek and Roman world before Christianity.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, there are things to, you know, good things from it, but sure. Like that, the basic human rights type of thing,
yeah,
is kind of absent, you know.
Even just that, like, for John being a lawyer, mm-hmm. why should someone have a right?
Right.
Even yeah. that base of a concept, where did we get that from?
Right.
You know, and kind of going from there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, so in that way, it's kind of experiential that we just enjoy the goodness of Christianity's influence, so yeah. that does give some accreditation to, you know, that the truthfulness of it, and that it just works. Lately, I've been enjoying Psalm 128 that starts off, happy is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. Mm-hmm. And that's so encouraging to me. It just kind of says to me, like, it just works. It's just, you can be well off, blessed, happy, by fearing the Lord and walking in his ways, yeah. you know.
And that proper, when I listened to some stuff in the past of that proper fear of God, that right. like, mm-hmm. that is something we've kind of lost. Still, if I find one thing that's hard to connect with someone who wouldn't take on, like, Christianity, mm-hmm. Would kind of be that kind of lack of a fear of anything. Mm-hmm. I can just do whatever the heck I want and not have any consequences. Or, and it kind of goes from there. But for me, that fundamental of I do want to do a good. Why would I even want to do that? Mm-hmm. And not in a like stifling, fearful way, but mm-hmm. like a proper
right.
That it's good to have a healthy actual fear of God because you want the love of Him, like to not kind of on purpose reject that, you know,
right? Kind of like an all heaviness, so weight to Him and a regard for Him and something along those lines.
Yeah. You know?
But
yeah.
like you said, not something stifling and like,
yeah.
like that. Yeah. So you were working in hospice and you're in music. That reminds me of a friend I know and his wife got early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah, we actually had a client like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and this was, I had the gift of, I had my internship, we got mm-hmm. married, we photographed, and mm-hmm. then we got Peter was our honeymoon baby. Mm-hmm. So when I say my time of music therapy is kind of internship, mm-hmm. But it's that, what I felt like it was the best prep for marriage, actually, of witnessing some. We had an actual, he was a former judge, like the most genuine, he would literally stand up and shake our hands when we would enter their house. And the kindest guy, and he had early onset Alzheimer's, and his was talk about how do you kind of go through this, where his own dad had just passed a few years previous from early Alzheimer's. He had eye issues, and then they were trying to get that fixed. They had, I think, even surgery, and mm-hmm. then it was the shock. It never got better, and it's because, I guess, that was early sign.
Oh, I see.
And then him witnessing his dad dying, and within not even a few years, getting the same diagnosis. And just to have the gift to enter that, and then provide, like they hired us. It was the wife was a very respected social worker and found out about the service that she could pay for. And the funniest moment was during Valentine's Day time. And of course, we had like a session that was more that theme. And it was the first time we ever got this little, just a few second glimpse of what he used to be like. And we asked him kind of how he met his wife and all that. And he just had this moment of like, oh man, I can't remember. Oh, that's so annoying. And he just had this like little like hint of, you could tell how much he wanted to remember of what his wife meant to him. And then him enjoying like singing songs for his wife through our help. And it was like that tearjerker of, to provide that. And, but yet also them, they were such an example of kind of, when I say suffering, of like, what do you do with this? And how do you still live? And, it's just something I'll never forget.
Yeah. So he was able to enjoy music toward the end?
Had work, because music is one of the last things to go.
Yeah.
And even if you can't produce it, it's still, sometimes we literally would have clients where they could not talk, but they could sing to lyrics. That they, or like the hymns that they grew up in church. You know, especially hymns. We were very blessed of people who grew up with the hymns, and this was in Iowa for the internship, and just such good examples of kind of that, the proper having at the end of your life what you have that baseline to go back to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting how powerful music can be.
Yeah.
In this particular case, my friend, when his wife was on hospice, there was a Roman Catholic deacon who would come and visit and really show this man, you know, who was the caretaker, a lot of attention and care. And he would, he has a video of it. He showed me. He's like a little, kind of like a smaller Asian man, but this Roman Catholic deacon. But he would come and he would take out his harmonica from his pocket.
Oh, sure.
And he would play music, and the wife would be able to respond to that and enjoy it. You know.
Yeah.
So it's just pretty.
And
neat.
It brings a way for them to connect as well as a couple. That's what I found.
Yeah.
Or we had another example of a mom who really was dying, like truthfully within that day or a few days. Mm-hmm. And the two sons were there, and she was totally, it was one of my actually most favorite moments. She was completely not responsive, just, mm-hmm. you know, and we, they kind of helped us understand which hymns were her favorite in church. Mm-hmm. And we started singing them all together, and she woke up. Hmm. And she literally sat up, waved to her sons, wasn't still kind of verbalizing, mm-hmm. but they got to tell her how much they loved her. Hmm. And we're kind of guessing that probably was probably going to be the only last interaction or something similar. Mm-hmm. But then she started singing the songs with us.
Oh, really? Wow.
And it was just that kind of, they will always have that, you know?
Yeah. So that just kind of brings up the topic of suffering, like you, you've mentioned already, and that it's just a part of the human experience because our outer nature, our bodies, you know, they're wasting away.
Yeah,
And then sometimes it can be in ways like, you know, what you're describing, and it just seems like that's just like loss after loss after loss. Like you have this particular disappointment, and you kind of maybe get a handle on that a little bit, but then there comes another one and just goes deeper and deeper and deeper. And I don't know, that's a just a strange thing. Like, you know, you have to learn how to, I guess, you know, have hope in the Lord and trust in the Lord.
Yeah.
And it just seems like that could go so deep. I don't know. It's hard. Yeah. Like, I haven't experienced a lot of suffering in my life, but it's just the human condition, and people have, and it's just, I don't know, it's just hard to think, like, how do people do that well? I mean, I guess you have to have God's grace, God's help to do that well, it seems like, because it seems like such a hard thing. You know, but...
And for us as Catholics, that would be then kind of where the sacramental life really comes in. And that, like, you kind of, your part is to just show up, receive it, and pray that the grace helps you to kind of, of course, you get through a day, but it's that, what's your... Even, you know, we talk a lot about of like your emotional or mental state, that how that one thing I find too that Christianity brings is that fundamental sense of hope, and like that the death on the cross and then the resurrection, and that like we actually love this relates where I'm from in Chicago. Just about 15 minutes from my house is a beautiful Byzantine Roman, it's a Byzantine Catholic church where it's, we call it Eastern Rite Catholic. And, this church in particular is really, their kind of roots are from Slovakia and their Easter, they call it Divine Liturgy, as we would call like Mass. And their Easter is just, it's kind of similar to Orthodoxy, but it's the it's a difference where we can go into it if you need it, but that would be the best comparison of, because they have icons and
okay,
it's
like an Eastern Orthodox church, but they're really Roman Catholic.
It's where they split off years ago, like the Orthodox.
Okay.
During the schism and all that.
Okay, I see.
And I forget for their own, but then at some point, which I don't remember which time, mm-hmm. they united back to Rome.
Oh, I see.
But okay. still kept the Eastern Rite.
I see.
And stuff.
Okay.
And there's actually more Eastern Rites than you realize, even Syria or other places. Hmm. I was very blessed to go to Sydney, Australia with a group during college. And there's one of the largest Maronite Rite where they're from Lebanon in okay. Sydney, for instance.
Okay.
But they will, it's bells and whistles and like that sense of you're just shouting like Jesus, like he resurrected. And and that was a really influential moment of that. Because 1 year I got to go to not the Holy Thursday, what we would call it, but the Good Friday, the Saturday, the Easter Vigil, and then Easter morning, mm-hmm. and really experience all three in the complete contrast of it. Mm-hmm. And then that in the priest there does a really good job of explaining those fundamental truths, honestly. And so, like, he would always on Easter be like, if this didn't happen, like, it's just complete despair, you know. Mm-hmm. And that always impacted me of that the God wanted to experience all the emotions and then sanctify it, actually. And mm-hmm. that, like, he's been through it as well, you know. And but that true fundamental piece of hope that, because again, I truly have seen people where you're like, how are you not in complete despair right now?
Right.
But it's like, even if it's just almost even a blind faith of hope, but just, no, I have to have just even a glimmer, you know.
Right.
And actually one art analogy I found, it wasn't part of it, but there were 2 or 3 years, I think it was about 2 years ago at the St. Louis Art Museum, they had a traveling exhibit that they always are rotating. Mm-hmm. And that one was art painted on rock. And then it was all displayed, and I got to visit it. And there's this one piece where it was basically the dark sky, but yet you still could see the tiny shit of where the light, because every good art has where the light source is. Hmm. And I just stared at that for a while of, like, it's total darkness, but yet there's just a little shit of what the artist did to show where the light source was for even a dark night. Hmm. And that, like, was very impactful to just kind of analyze that and mm-hmm. kind of let that truth kind of soak in.
Right. So there's a lot of, the Bible's full of hope, like Christian hope is like the Bible's full of that. It's just a matter of like working it in so that we're really experiencing it where it's not just an intellectual type of thing.
Yeah.
And I guess that might come through experience and stuff and just the trials and learning to, suffering produces something in us. It grows us and matures us as we produce endurance and things like that.
And the fundamental of how you treat other people. That's another kind mm-hmm. of piece, especially in music therapy internship, that being a rare witness of when you say you don't know what someone's going through, like being exposed to, you really don't know of all the endless things that could happen in someone's life. Mm-hmm. And that would someone, after having even just a quick interaction with you, would they feel like love, you know? And mm-hmm. you can still have healthy boundaries and like that's necessary, but that, like, do they come away with like, what is it about for that person? Why, how can they show up in life like that? Mm-hmm. You know, that's for me like a big thing I think about. And
yeah. And what do you mean by boundaries, like when it comes to love? Like, were you referring, what's that?
I mean, you're always human nature. Either someone can unfortunately either be like an actual narcissist or just in life in general, those awareness is someone kind of wanting to take advantage of me.
I see.
Or
right.
And just having a proper kind of, you can be kind but not have where they're going to then like right. want to abuse that. Or
right.
That's, I guess, the reminder of what I mean.
So you're caring for someone, but you're caring for yourself as well.
Or yeah. At least, yeah. Yeah.
Right. I see what you mean. I guess one thing I'd like to ask that I ask my guests sometimes is, like, what do you know now about life that really is important to you that you maybe didn't know 10, 20 years ago or so? Anything along those lines?
Motherhood has shaped me tremendously.
Yeah.
And the sense of, like, I love having the age range of our kids. Mm-hmm. That our oldest is about to turn 13. Mm-hmm. And that he has a little sibling to interact with, and that sense of there's kind of a acceptance at times of dying to self to, for the mom of, because there have been on my part some deliberate decisions of like, this is the life I want to have. Mm-hmm. And sacrificing some things, but then also being endlessly rewarded. Mm-hmm. And that, because I'll be 40 in 2 years, 2.5 years. And mm-hmm. That, because I, for my own personal life, I was kind of confronted even during my internship of, they could kind of tell I was about to get married and then was hoping to have kids. And kind of the sense of like, why are we wasting our time with you? Mm-hmm. Like, will you even become a music therapist or not? Or, there was kind of some talk of that, and I understood where they were coming from, but it was also of that for myself personally of, but this is a joyful sacrifice. Like, and whether or not some people can do different things, and it's not about that, but just that, like if someone asked me, like, do you have any regrets? It's like, no, I really don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's through time for me to have of having a joy with the 'cause like, would you say it's easy? No, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. You know, but that just joy of the family that you built and all the ways even music therapy influences actually our own family life and me right. as a mom. And
it seems like a good liberal arts type of education is helpful for life in general, for being a mom or whatever it might be. Yeah.
And having this joy also of, because, like, I'm someone who's kind of naturally slow and can't take on a ton, honestly. Mm-hmm. But then having, like, one aspect for myself is not to feel jealous of maybe another mom who could take on more, mm-hmm. or even has in-town family help and maybe could pull off a little more than I'm able to. Mm-hmm. But having that just joy of we both have our own unique ways to live. Mm-hmm. And can I, like a challenge for myself is, can I kind of blossom what my own strengths and weaknesses are, mm-hmm. and handle that well or not, you know?
Right.
And not that total don't compare.
Right.
You know?
We seem to have like some pretty good maturity and wisdom about just life and things and just this, you know, understanding that you're talking about right now. So what has helped you to deepen and grow in this, or what tends to help you to grow and mature, you know, as a person and spiritually and, you know, just sure. that type of thing?
I've been very blessed to have people in my life that chose my biggest influence in my life at the very beginning, starting in fifth grade, was my piano teacher. And I witnessed her husband had Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. And she built an attached music room to the house and had walkie-talkies that he could contact her if it was an emergency. And she, who I still see actually in town, where I'm from, but her witness to showing up every day, no matter what, and her dedication to taking care of him was that first like rare glimpse into that, and also inspired actually music therapy too, of just those kind of where that could enter. And then for myself, I have actually a lot of learning disabilities, and I've from a very, very young age have always had that real sense of I can't do it all. And like from like much younger than I think the average person. And having to confront that of like, what do I do with this? And and that like when I say acceptance of I can't maybe be as the kind of mom who does everything as someone else, having time to kind of own that, still challenge myself in a proper sense, but being okay with that kind of smallness of life, to be honest.
Right.
Kind of, but yet, having, I've also challenged myself to learn more. Like I struggle with a lot of sensory, they call it like sensory processing disorder. And I actually was able to get tested a few years ago, and I was off the charts of how much it impacts me. And it helped to put pieces together of where, even like how I talk sometimes, that like the processing piece, when does it come in? And learning to just kind of almost dwell in it and allow it to be, and not like fight it, you know? And then the, the sense of maturity that sometimes can bring, actually, that like I can even like self-advocate for myself. Cause I've had some moments in life where, especially if someone is like a, I can be a fast talker, but someone who's that super quick thinking, gets things done, has the checklists, all of, and kind of sometimes my response can be a little slower tone, that I can see it in their eyes of just, oh gosh, oh, I gotta, okay, I don't want to slow down with you, you know? And me kind of in a self-advocating way, just give me a space or mm-hmm. give me a moment and I will answer your question. And having a kind of not, I kind of used to maybe make fun of myself with that, but not to have like a self-love actually, mm-hmm. to be like okay with that. And then maybe the other person's response to it even, you know.
Right. Yeah, that seems like really healthy, really cool, you know, to be just okay with, you know, and just enjoy how God has made you and just enjoy the life that you're living, you know, before Him and so forth, you know.
Well, and I even found, like, when I was researching way back wedding photographers, mm-hmm. one thing that always stood out for me with your website and why I contacted you was I was like, this is a person who can analyze a moment and then just capture it. But, like, really not, like, there's a time and a place for, okay, stand here and look and smile. Mm-hmm. But in your photos, if there was one in particular that it was like, wow, like you capture that moment. Hmm. And then even the love, I always sense this like love of marriage itself and like trying to like show the world that. Mm-hmm. And it just spoke to me of like, oh, wow. Cool. Mm-hmm. And in our photos, it always is present and such a gift for us. How many years later, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's neat. I do consider it a privilege to be able to photograph days where everybody's dressing up and it's so elegant and beautiful and then the marriage ceremony itself, you know, and everything. It's just, it was a really neat job, you know.
and I felt like you, whether you were aware of it or not, but like you owning your unique style to photography and how mm-hmm. your brain thinks. And even, you know, speed of speech naturally or other things that, like, this is who you are, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just had that glimpse of, like, you own yourself, like, kind of a... Mm-hmm. It was just something that I picked up on.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Well, I guess just kind of as something to wrap up and wrap up on, like, so what's your aim in life when it comes down to what you're really looking for each day as you go throughout your life? Just kind of what is that for you?
For me, it's especially for someone who doesn't like routine, mm-hmm. but knows the good of it, is consistently challenging myself of what am I actually doing during the day, mm-hmm. and how can I show up more consistently for everyone? And having, and the biggest challenge I find for myself is owning that kind of more hidden life that I kind of lead at times, but that by its, if I live that well, that alone influences the world. And that that's something I kind of struggle with, of I want to in reality be kind of everyone knows me and be the extreme extrovert, but the fun challenge of not always seeking something in a day to like overstimulate myself, but just can I even, my kind of baseline is, can I sit in silence and actually be slightly okay with it? Hmm. And like own my thoughts, still work on what they bring, but like kind of can you look in the mirror and actually be content with what you see no matter what, you mm-hmm. know? And can you sit in a quiet space and not try to run from it? And like, if I kind of can achieve that, then I feel like I've made a step forward. And
Then are you so naturally kind of being an extrovert?
I am. Okay. Yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Cause, I'm kind of like pretty much an introvert, so mm-hmm. I'm just kind of the opposite. Like, can I just connect with people uh-huh. and be comfortable with that?
You know? I actually found I have a ton of introverted friends, mm-hmm. and my kind of gift is to go into a space that I've never been in, connect with people, and then introduce my introverted friends to them mm-hmm. and see, like, ooh, they would go well together mm-hmm. and kind of be the person who makes the connections. I find that's like a real gift for me.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And also kind of having fun with that and mm-hmm. Seeing where, I mean, I have literally friends from all over the world now, of either times where we lived in apartments and we met people from different countries. And it's just been fun to see where a connection is formed. Mm-hmm. And we can be completely not agreeing on anything, even just we're just two human beings, and that's where it ends. But yet there still can be a beautiful kind of friendship that forms, and mm-hmm. through time it kind of either it stays or not. But that's me also even being comfortable to say, like, no, that is a gift for me, and not kind of hiding that even, you right. know, and just kind of having a joy about it. And
yeah. Well, thanks, Natalie, for being a guest. You're I've really welcome. Enjoyed talking with you. It's been really good, and I just appreciate the person you are and being able to explore that and ask you all these questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.